Hello and welcome to Unity Presbyterian Church Online. This week in worship, Pastor David talks about being prepared as we watch for Jesus to return. Let's listen.
Well, have you ever been in a situation that you were utterly unprepared for? I'm sure we all have. I mean, what am I saying? You're all living through 2020, so of course you've had that sort of situation. But I want you to think of a specific situation, kind of like what Bailey mentioned with packing for a trip, on a time where you just were not prepared for what happened. And really, the feeling that you get inside when you're not prepared. It's not a good feeling, right? Let me give you an example of when I felt that way. So I went backpacking in college with three of my buddies from college. And our goal, it was a 7-day backpacking trip. And we were going to go around the base of Mount Rainier. It was a 96-mile journey, and that was the goal, to make it all the way around, to finish where you started. Well, for that, we needed to go and get supplies, and we needed to be well prepared if we were going to make it almost 100 miles in 7 days. So we went to the store and got a lot of the supplies you'd think you would need, you know, dehydrated food, a little camping stove, a little bit of propane, all of the essentials. Well, I'm looking at my kind of backpacking supply list, and on that list towards the bottom was ponchos, you know, just in case it rained. Well, we went and got to the poncho section of the store, and I was surprised how expensive they were. I mean, I was a broke college student, and we looked at these ponchos, and they're expensive, and not only that, but they're heavy and bulky, and I'm going to be carrying this around all week. I mean, what if it doesn't rain? Wouldn't I feel foolish for buying that heavy poncho? And that's when I noticed. Right there on the floor was a basket, a discount basket of 99-cent ponchos. I was like, perfect. That's great. Picked up one of those, put it in my bag. I was like, I am good to go. The first 3 days of our journey were spectacular. I took a picture that will show you of what, I think this is the third day, and that's what Mount Rainier looked like, and we're making good time, we're circling the mountain, and it is just beautiful, you know, picture-perfect blue skies. You know where this is headed. The fourth day came, and at 2 a.m., we all woke up in the tent because of a downpour. Not just a little bit of rain, or even a moderate amount. This was an intense mountain storm, and it rained for the next 12 hours. I quickly learned, as we took down camp in the rain and began hiking to our next campsite in the rain, I quickly learned that a 99-cent poncho does nothing. Literally does nothing. It does not keep you dry one iota. We were soaked to the bone because this was one of these like cold mountain rains that really gets into you. And so all day as we hike and it rains and I'm in my poncho, we're just absolutely miserable. We get to within a mile of our campsite, and all we had to do was cross a little footbridge across this river, and we'd then make it to the campsite. But unfortunately, because it rained all days, the river rose and knocked out the footbridge. So here's a picture. I want you to notice two things. I want you to notice how disappointed I look that we can't cross the bridge anymore because of the river. But also, who makes a short sleeve poncho? I mean, look at that thing. That is so thin. If I would have known what it looked like outside the package, there's no way I would have bought a 99-cent poncho. And so we have this stream, and we don't have a bridge anymore. The only thing that we could do to make it to our campsite was to ford the river. So we got a picture of what that looks like, and notice who they made go first. Yeah, what sort of friends are they? It was about that moment, that moment that picture was taken, that I'm knee-deep in a mountain stream, completely drenched in a short-sleeve poncho, that I really realized, like, deep inside myself, just how unprepared for that trip we really were. It's not a good feeling. It's not a good feeling to be unprepared for something. I'm sure you can think of your own times and experiences. Maybe you're a student, and you can remember coming into class and not realizing there's a test. What sort of feeling in your stomach do you get when you're looking at your test and your mind is completely drawing a blank? It's a horrible feeling, isn't it? Or perhaps you can think of a time when you were getting ready to go on a big vacation, and you think you have everything, and then you sit down on the airplane, you buckle up, and then your mind remembers that one essential thing that you forgot to bring. Being unprepared is just an absolutely horrible feeling. Well, the reason we're talking about this is because our text today really speaks about the importance for us to prepare not just for the physical parts of life, but it's important to prepare spiritually. As Bailey said, it's important to prepare our hearts spiritually for what is to come. And particularly, we're going to study a parable. It's a story that Jesus shares with us about preparing our hearts spiritually for Jesus to come again. Now, when we think about Jesus returning, I bet that sort of idea seems a bit abstract to you, doesn't it? I mean, it's this idea that Jesus has come once. 2,000 years ago, God came in the flesh to earth. Jesus preached and healed and taught. Jesus eventually died, was crucified, was resurrected, ascended into heaven, and before he left, told his disciples and really the world, I will come again to finish this process of redeeming creation. And I want you to be ready for when I return. Well, we are now living in that in-between time where Jesus has come once. We read about that in the Gospels, and we look forward to a time where Jesus will come again. But that time hasn't happened yet. So we're in this in-between time, and Jesus tells parables to the people back then and to us to say, hey, spiritually, be prepared for when I come again. And so when we think about this, about Jesus returning, we sometimes call that Jesus' second coming. I bet you experience a mixture of emotions. I mean, part of you yearns for that time, doesn't it? I mean, part of you yearns to see Christ face to face. You want that deep within your being. But I bet there's another part of you that's a little uncertain, a little uneasy when you think about Jesus coming again, simply because we don't have all the details. Like, what's that going to feel like? What's the timing of that? When is that going to happen? I mean, it'll be good, but is it going to interrupt everything that I have planned in this life? Like, there's probably a little bit of uneasiness as well. It's a combination of those things. And so I want to acknowledge that as we begin this discussion, that it can be a bit abstract thinking of Jesus coming again. But here's one thing I know for certain. One thing I know for certain is that spiritually, we want to be ready for that encounter, don't we? We want to be ready. And so today we're going to talk about how. How do we get ready for that encounter? Well, my hope is that we can study this text, this parable that Jesus shares with us, so that we can then learn how to prepare ourselves for that time. Here's the setting of the parable that we're about to study. Jesus tells a story about a wedding. Now, weddings in the village life and village culture that would have heard this parable first were really the high point of village life. It was a giant celebration for the entire village when someone was going to have a wedding. But weddings looked quite a bit different back then, 2,000 years ago, than how they do today. For example, there's one moment, kind of after the ceremony, where there'd be a group of women, in this case, 10 women in our parable, that are getting ready to escort the groom to the house of the wedding feast, the wedding banquet. For most of us, today, the ceremony is the high point of a wedding. But in this culture, it really was this wedding feast that was the high point. That was the moment of celebration. And so these 10 women would have lamps. They were oil lamps, and they would light them, and this would usually happen towards dusk, and they would have a kind of lit processional where they would lead the way and the groom would follow as they had this kind of triumphant entry into the house of the wedding feast. So we don't really do that today, but that really was the high point of what their wedding experience would have been. So knowing the setting, here's how Jesus begins the parable. Jesus says, "Then the kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 women took their lamps and went to meet the groom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise." Okay, so right at the beginning, you can notice that Jesus is setting up this parable in a really specific way. He's saying there's 10 women, but we're categorizing them. 5 were foolish, 5 were wise. This was a very common storytelling technique of Jesus' day. I mean, think about the book of Proverbs. The last time you read the book of Proverbs, it often sets up stories like this to say, well, there's a wise person who did this, there's a foolish person who did that, and the punchline is always the same. Be like the wise person. The same is going to be in Jesus' story when he's saying there's 5 foolish women, 5 wise women. So the punchline is, so be like the wise women. All right. Notice also that all 10 women have lamps. Now, as I mentioned earlier, these would have been oil lamps. We got a picture of what that looked like during this time period. So it's a lamp where you'd put the oil inside of it, and then there's a little bit of wick where the fire would emerge, which these things would work great. They would be beautiful if you're having this kind of lit processional at night, right? These things would be great as long as you had oil. If you didn't have oil within that lamp, it would be like us trying to use a flashlight without a battery. It simply would not work. So let's see what happens next with these 10 women. In verse 3, it says, "When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them." And when we read that, go, well, that's kind of foolish. "But the wise, they took flasks of oil with their lamps." Okay, what I want you to notice is both the wise and the foolish women, they all have working lamps. They're ready to go. And if the groom showed up right at that moment, they would do their lit processional in just the way that they had planned. But the wise women brought a flask of extra oil with them, just in case. Because what if the groom didn't come when they thought the groom would come? What if the groom was delayed and they needed more oil? The wise women were prepared. They brought more oil with them. Whereas the foolish women, they had enough oil if the groom were to come right then and there. But if the groom is delayed any sort of amount of time, they did not bring extra oil with them. They're not prepared in that sense. Well, I'm sure you can see where this is headed. The groom does not come at the expected time. Verse 5 says, "As the groom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept." Yeah, so it doesn't matter whether you're foolish or whether you're wise, all 10 women become drowsy and fall asleep. And verse 6, it says, "But at midnight, there was a shout. Look, here's the groom. Come out to meet him. Then all of those women got up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise replied, 'No, there will not be enough for you and for us. You had better go to the dealers and buy some for yourselves.'" Okay, so as we read this parable, as I'm sure we can anticipate, the groom is delayed. Not just by a little bit, the groom is way delayed. Doesn't come until midnight, which would have been highly unusual. And so the wise women who were prepared, who had the extra oil, they can use their extra oil, they're ready to go. You know the punchline of the story, the foolish women did not bring extra oil, their lamps are going out, they cannot participate in the lighted processional. Now, at this moment, you might be wondering, why don't the wise women just share? Right? Wouldn't that be the nice thing to do? Wouldn't it be the Christian thing to do to share some of your oil with the foolish women who didn't bring extra oil? And in real life, absolutely. Yes, that would be the nice, kind Christian thing to do. But remember, this is not real life. This is a parable. It's a story that's set up in a very specific way to teach us something. And so Jesus is kind of gearing up for the big point at the end of the parable. So you got to just kind of go with it as he sets the stage for what happens next. Well, the foolish women leave to go get more oil, and then we're told in verse 10, and while they went to buy it, the groom came. And those who were ready, notice that word ready, when they were ready, they went with him into the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the other women also came, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he replied, truly, I tell you, I do not know you. So the wise women with the extra oil get in to the wedding banquet. And the foolish women with no extra oil do not get into the wedding banquet. So the moral of the story is that when you go to a wedding, always bring extra oil. No, wait, no, that's not the moral of the story. Never mind. That wouldn't make any sense to us today. No, the moral of the story, what Jesus is gearing up to, is his summary statement in the final verse, verse 13, when Jesus says, keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. Yes, Jesus tells this whole parable with the expressed purpose of reminding us, whoever hears the parable, to keep awake, because we don't know when the groom is coming. We don't know the day or the hour. Now remember, this is a parable, which means everything is symbolic for something else. It has meaning attached to it. And here, Jesus is the groom. You see, in Matthew's chapter 24 and 25, the chapters right around this, Jesus is sharing a series of parables. And all of them are about the same theme, about the same topic, Jesus coming again. And so this parable, right at the beginning of Matthew 25, is no exception. This is a parable about Jesus returning, the second coming, and Jesus in this parable would be like the groom. The groom, they're waiting for the groom, they're preparing for the groom, but they don't know exactly when the groom is going to show up. So if Jesus is the groom in this parable, that means that you and I would fall into that group of women who are waiting. We are waiting for Jesus' return. We are preparing for Jesus' return, but we do not know the day nor the hour of Jesus' return. So Jesus simply says, so keep awake, right? Be prepared. Be ready. Don't be caught in a storm in a 99-cent poncho. Be ready. Be prepared. Practically, what does it mean to prepare for Jesus' second coming? I mean, if the punchline of the story is to keep awake and be like one of those wise women, practically, what does that look like? How can we be in that category of wise women? Well, I want to offer two suggestions. Two practical suggestions that you can take home today to help prepare your heart spiritually for encountering Jesus once again. The first thing I would say, the first practical way, is a simple acknowledgement. An acknowledgement that Jesus will return. Now, I know that sounds simple, but often when we think of these sort of stories about Jesus coming again, kind of at the end of time, they seem so outside the realm of our understanding or outside the realm of our possibility that part of us just discounts them to say, well, I don't know about that. I'm just going to live my day-to-day life. So part of practically preparing is just acknowledging, no, Jesus will return. That one day I will meet Jesus face to face. And that's going to happen in one of two ways. I mean, that may happen when Jesus returns, and if it happens in our lifetime. That would be one way where you will encounter Jesus face to face. But the other may happen when we take our last breath, which all of us will do. All of us someday will die, and all of us will then encounter Jesus face to face. And so the encounter itself is not in doubt. The timing of it may be. We don't know when the groom is going to come, but the encounter itself is not in doubt. So it begins with acknowledgement. Yeah, Jesus will return. I personally am going to meet Jesus face to face. So how do I prepare for that? Well, here's a helpful saying. Speculation is futile, but preparation is crucial. And here's what I mean by that. When we begin to think about Jesus coming again, it can be kind of fun to maybe speculate on the timing of that. I mean, how many books have been written speculating about, well, here's when the end times will happen, and here's when Jesus is going to return again. But Jesus in this parable says that's really not the point at all. That's kind of meaningless because you don't know the day or the hour. And so don't spend all your time trying to figure out the day or the hour. In another parable, Jesus says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, you don't know when the thief is going to come. Otherwise, you'd lock all the doors and get all prepared. No, what Jesus is saying here is speculation about the specifics, the timing, is really futile. It doesn't make any sense to spend your time there. Instead, spend your time preparing your heart. Preparation is crucial. And preparation is an internal reality. So preparing inside of you to encounter Jesus. And really, we encounter Jesus every day, don't we? And that's a bit of a foreshadowing and practice for us to encounter Jesus on a daily basis. So that's the first thing that I would practically recommend to you in light of this parable. And the second is this. It really is to take seriously this summary statement of Jesus. This statement when Jesus says, keep awake. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. We all know that sleep is good for us, right? Like doctors recommend you get at least 8 hours of sleep per night, which young parents would say, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? But we get the benefits. Sleep helps boost your immune system. Sleep makes you more fresh and energized and productive the next day. Sleep can even help repair your memory. I mean, sleep has so many benefits for both the body and the mind. But you know, there is a type of sleep that's not good for you. Yeah, truly. There's a type of sleep that you do not want to participate in. And do you know what type of sleep that is? Spiritual sleep. Yeah, you do not want to be spiritually sleepy or caught sleepwalking. That's a little bit of what Jesus is trying to say here with the statement of keep awake. He's saying it's possible for a person to go through the motions of faith in their life without ever really engaging with God. And that's a bit like sleepwalking through your life or through your faith. I mean, when you're sleepy, how does that feel? How does it feel when you're sleepy? You're kind of groggy. Maybe your eyes are half closed. Your reflexes probably not as quick. You're not as alert. There's not as much clarity. Maybe everything's a little bit blurry. Well, Jesus is comparing those feelings of sleepiness to you walking in faith. And as you approach your faith in this life, Jesus says sometimes we can be sleepwalking through this life, where we're not alert to God's presence in our life, where we don't see with clarity the work of God in the world. Yet Jesus is saying, be careful here to not sleepwalk through this life when you're focusing always maybe just on the here and now and the temporary and forgetting the eternal. Jesus' statement is basically to say, well, wake up. Wake up. Now is time for you to wake up. Now is time for you to become alert and aware of God acting in the world on a daily basis.
That's really what this whole keep awake, be prepared mantra that Jesus is sharing with us really means. Because at its heart, I think Jesus realizes that spiritual preparation is something that every individual must do for themselves. I think that's why those women couldn't share their oil in this parable. It's because I can't spiritually prepare someone else's heart to meet God. That is something everyone must do on their own as individuals. And Jesus is really trying to get us focused on staying awake and aware enough of God in this world so that we do feel spiritually prepared to meet Christ. You know, the Apostle Paul, he picks up on this very same theme, this theme of staying awake, being aware, getting ready for Jesus to come. In Romans chapter 13, verse 11 and 12, here's what he says. Paul says, "You know what time it is, how it is now the moment for you to wake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we became believers. The night is far gone," meaning the time for sleeping is over. "The day is near." This is the way that Paul is describing Jesus' coming, Jesus' second coming. He says it's as if we're being roused from sleep. And in our awakening, we are beginning to see the glimmers of a new day. Yeah, it's almost like the sunrise is cresting over the horizon. A new day is beginning because we see the time when Jesus will return. And we're not quite in that full new day yet, but we see the beginnings of it. We are waking up to the reality of what that is going to be like. Here's a picture, and it's a picture of the morning right before the sun appears. In this picture, you don't actually see the sun. The sun has not risen yet, but you can see the path of its rising, can't you? And you can see the effects of the sun already in our world. Even though the sun is not visible, you see the light shining, you see the different colors emerging. This is the sort of portrait that Paul is sharing with us when we think of Jesus coming once again. Where he's saying, Jesus is not here yet, the sun has not fully risen into the sky yet, but you are beginning to see the effects of a brand new day. And because of that, we are to seek to live into that reality, into the reality keeping awake and aware of that new day of Christ finally coming and breaking into our world. It's as if Paul is saying, once you start seeing the light shine above the horizon, there's no going back to the darkness. So wake up. God is here. I wonder, can you see it? Can you see it in this world today? Can you see the new day dawning? Yeah, in this world today, can you see it? The light breaking through. Let us not be lulled into a sort of spiritual sleep, becoming so preoccupied with the temporary that we forget the reality of the eternal. Now, I bet that your soul is yearning to wake up and be connected to its creator. And so as Paul put it, now is the moment for you to wake from sleep. Not tomorrow, not next week. Now is the moment for you to wake from sleep. Or as Jesus says, keep awake. Be prepared. Salvation is nearer to us now than in any other moment in history. The night is done. The time for sleep is done. A new day is dawning. Amen.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.